How can pornography impact you, your loved ones, and the world around you? Discover the answer for yourself in our free 3-part documentary series, Brain, Heart, World. In 3 30-minute episodes, this docuseries dives into how pornography impacts individuals, relationships, and society. With witty narration and colorful animation, this age-appropriate series shines a hopeful light on this heavy topic. In each episode, you'll hear from experts who share research on porn's harms, as well as true stories from people who have been impacted personally by pornography. Stream the full series for free, or purchase an affordable screening license at brainheartworld.org.
An older guy who grew up, you know, using a Playboy magazine where the novelty and shock and surprise wears off when you're done turning the pages, and you have to wait another month before you get anything novel. The stimulation and the level of conditioning can't even compare to what internet porn can do to a young person. And so these young guys that grew up, like myself, wired deeply to internet porn. I was watching compilation videos in high school where the clip changed every 2 seconds. I was seeing a drastic angle in the highlights of best parts of porn clips. And I'd watch that for, you know, 10, 30 minutes to an hour. So I would see more naked people in 10 minutes in that session in 2005 than, you know, our ancestors would see in an entire lifetime.
My name is Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. And in case you're new here, Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. As we sit down with experts, influencers, activists, and people with personal accounts, we cover a wide variety of topics that may be triggering to some. You can refer to the episode notes for a specific trigger warning. Listener discretion is advised. Today's episode is with Gabe Deem. He's an international speaker, writer, and activist. After recovering from porn addiction and a porn-induced sexual dysfunction himself, he has spent years studying the science of addiction and now runs RebootNation.org, which is a free online recovery community that helps addicts and their partners overcome problems related to pornography consumption. Gabe has presented at West Point. He's been featured in a Time magazine cover story. He's shared his story with Rolling Stone, MTV, Netflix, and many others. With all that being said, let's just jump into the conversation. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming.
So we want to welcome to the podcast Gabe Deem.
Thanks for having me, Garrett. I'm excited.
We are too. We're fortunate to be able to sit down with you. I'm actually standing, so I shouldn't say sit down with you. Are you sitting or standing, Gabe?
I am popping a squat. Yes, I am.
Nice. And you're currently in... I sent the equipment to Texas. Are you in Texas?
Yes, it arrived. Dallas, Texas.
Nice. I wanted to tell you how I first heard about you, because this is our first time speaking.
Yeah, and right? I've seen some of your stuff, and I'll tell you the first thing I saw about you when you're done.
Okay, cool. So, do you know that I rode my bike across the United States? Do you know that?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and say mine first. I saw your video that Fight the New Drug pushed out a couple years ago, where I saw this dude riding a bike with a chain across the country.
Yeah.
My first thought was, what an absolute beast. And then when you tie such an important message to doing something so insane, you realize that it's not insane. It's actually one of the more sane things to do, because you're trying to turn a negative into a positive. And I immediately respected that so much. And I'm into fitness. I'm a trainer as well.
Oh, cool.
And so just all around, I respected the way you used your message and how you decided to get it out there with, you know, physical fitness and pushing yourself to the limit and pushing back against the darkness. And I just thought it was all freaking fantastic. So that's when I first heard about you. So
cool. Well, thanks for the kind words and the encouragement. Well, the reason why I asked if you knew about the bike ride was because when I was flying out to Virginia to begin my ride in the airport, I saw it was like April of 2016, and I saw the Time magazine with the episode, like the cover story was on pornography and its harmful effects. And so I was like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. I'm coming out to ride my bike across to build awareness. And I see Time magazine has a cover story, and then I buy it and I'm reading it, and your name was in there. And now we're speaking. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, that Time magazine piece, in my opinion, as far as mainstream article goes, was still probably one of the best articles to cover the topic. And Fight the New Drug got a shout out in there too. And it just really painted the picture for what it is, that young guys are quitting porn for health reasons, and it's screwing us up. Something that we thought was going to be pleasurable, and something that we thought was going to enhance our sex lives growing up. You know, we're the super bad generation where watching porn was just teen culture and joking about porn was completely normal. And again, we just thought it was something that would, you know, as everyone says, spice up the bedroom, and it ended up doing the complete opposite. And so, you know, you see a lot of mainstream articles that completely read as if they were written in the, you know, 1800s, as just it's a moral issue, this and that, and a lot of misconceptions, and painting porn addicts as loser shut-ins in their grandparents' basements, and all these things that don't necessarily capture the true story of, you know, just about every young guy is super into porn by the time he's in high school, and that we aren't turning to porn for the, I guess, historical reasons of just trauma and abuse or shame or whatever, but we're actually just, we all have easy access, chronically consuming it, and it's screwing us up. And that Time piece really painted a good picture. And at the end, it even said that, you know, we're going into a mainstream environment where there's so many misconceptions, and people push back on the concept of porn addiction. And it really clearly articulated that, you know, we're trying to shatter those misconceptions. We're all trying to raise awareness on the physiological effects, and there's no really other mission we have other than to raise awareness so people can make informed decisions. And that Time piece was a big shift in the mainstream, I guess, perception of the problem.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised to see that in the airport. Well, let's rewind to, when was Reboot Nation formed?
March of 2014.
What made you form this organization, Reboot Nation?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. There was a specific forum called yourbrainrebalance.com that was specifically focused on porn addiction and sexual dysfunction. But there was, it was just the wild, wild west of recovery forums, right? There was, you know, little moderation. Guys were encouraging prostitute use and all sorts of stuff like that. And the ethics were non-existent. There was no really oversight. And so I wanted to start Reboot Nation to, number one, have, you know, a little bit of a moderation kind of ethical guideline, but also to really focus on the neuroscience. That was another thing that some of the other forums were lacking, was specifically pointing people to the neuroscience. And that's always been my niche, because that was what was most beneficial to me. And then also I wanted to raise awareness on the physiological effects of porn use. So that was always my intent behind Reboot Nation, was to point people to the neuroscience, and to stay away from ad hominem attacks. And because again, on some of the other forums, there was people just constantly making fun of each other, attacking. It was not a healthy environment. And I wanted to kind of take a little bit of the, not the 12-step model, I guess, because we don't have a model per se, but just kind of the guidance to where it's a healthy environment. I wanted to make sure that Reboot Nation had some moderation to be a healthy environment.
So it's going to be 6 years, because it started in 2014?
Yeah. March of 2014, and my own recovery was in 2011. But as far as Reboot Nation goes, you know, it's consistently kept a pretty steady pace growing. We're at 17,000 members, mostly young guys. We do have some women on there as well. And there's a section for partners too, that have a loved one or a partner that's going through addiction or sexual dysfunction recovery.
Cool. So is it a registered 501c3?
No, it's not. It's just it's a free website that I started. So cool. it's not a legit 501c3 or anything, and it has no advertisements on it. Every suggestion for professional help I have, I just did that for free, just linked to some people on there, and so there's nothing. I don't take donations or anything on the site or anything like that.
When you say you don't take them on the site, is there another way to receive donations?
Yes. So recently, I finally got in the Patreon game. So I do have a Patreon account. It's just my name, Patreon Gabe Deem. And so that is something that I do want to continue to grow so I can, you know, hopefully do this full time. This has been a side passion project of mine. All the time and effort I've put in has just been on my free time to create content that I find that I think will be beneficial to people. And, you know, so hopefully I can eventually pour all my resources and time into creating helpful content.
Cool. Well, we will link to your Patreon for our listeners that feel inclined to go and support you in that way. Can you explain to our listeners what is a reboot?
Yeah, so a reboot is our term for porn recovery, and we use the word reboot so you can envision your brain kind of like rebooting a computer, wiping it clean. You know, you essentially the analogy would be you downloaded porn software and you've conditioned and taught your brain to respond to a certain stimulus, namely porn, to react a certain way and to become aroused by it. And so that term reboot is like taking your brain, giving it a break, wiping it clean, and then we have a term called rewiring, where you rewire or download more natural software, for the analogy's sake, to where you rewire your arousal back to a real person. So avoid pixels on a screen, clicking from tab to tab, swiping through porn websites, whatever the case may be, and then giving your brain time to rest, regain sensitivity, you know, regain dopamine receptors, etc., and then rewire your arousal template back to a real partner. That's the main goal of a reboot, is to function sexually in real life. Because we've, you know, a lot of guys in our generation have trained for the wrong sport. It's like playing Madden NFL on Xbox all through your adolescence. And then when you're 25 years old, you actually might not even be able to throw or catch a football. And if you want to be good at football, you need to spend time on a football field. And if you want to be, I guess, good at sex or being able to have sex, you need to spend time around real people. And for younger kids, obviously, we're not encouraging young kids to go have tons of sex, but we are encouraging young people to spend time and connect with real people. I think that's something that everyone desires at an innate level, is connection. And the idea basically is the more connected you get through porn and online, the more disconnected you can get in real life.
And who is the person behind the name Reboot Nation? Are you the one who thought of that?
Yeah, that Reboot Nation name is me. And I could not tell you who's behind the concept of rebooting. I can give you a little history, though. So in the mid-2000s, you had guys start showing up on forums about all kinds of topics, whether it was a guitar forum, a car forum, bodybuilding sites, health sites. I remember one of the first sites I found was called ehealthforum.com or something like that. And you would have threads all over the internet, thousands of posts long. And all these guys had one thing in common: years of internet porn use, eventually leading them to a place where they couldn't function with the real partner. And somewhere in the mid-2000s, maybe 2007, 2008, guys started calling it rebooting. The first guys that, you know, had the availability of the supernormal stimulus that internet porn is were the first guys to develop problems. And again, they were the computer nerds, so they used that term rebooting, which, you know, is a brilliant way to capture the phenomena. And all of these reboot-focused forums continued to grow as neuroscience came out and as the young guys who grew up on this content were getting screwed up by the thousands. And so now, you know, just English-speaking forums alone, there's over a million guys trying to recover. And then you have forums in China with, you know, one forum I think has over 3 million members. And so this is a worldwide problem. And the first generation to grow up with unlimited access to porn has realized it had the opposite effect that they thought it would. It, you know, they thought it would lead to more pleasure, but as I found out in my case, it ended up taking my ability to experience pleasure away. So
yeah, I read a quote from you that said that you were told that porn would be a sex positive thing, but ended up being completely sex negative. Can you talk to that a little bit about your experience?
Yeah. So, you know, the concept of porn addiction, a lot of people think, okay, if you're a porn addict, you're probably running away from trauma, shame, and you're easing the pain. But addiction specialists have, over the last decade, found out that there's a new type of addict, and some of them have called this opportunity addiction. Paula Hall, a therapist in the UK, she's a brilliant therapist, and she often calls this opportunity addiction. And there's two groups of porn addicts, and I would be in the second group. I would be in the pleasure pursuing group. So you have one group that might be easing pain and seeking relief, and you have another group that, you know, as a child, they were just pursuing pleasure. They were a horny kid trying to bust nuts to pixels on a screen, and over years of doing that, they conditioned their brain to only respond to that certain stimulus. And so that would be me. I never turned to porn because I couldn't get real life sex. Long story short, I never felt like I couldn't have a real life partner. And I also became sexually active at 14. So right when my internet porn use was really taken off, which started around the age of 12, I was sexually active. And through high school and college, I was watching porn and having sex. So again, like growing up, I thought, you know, I was watching this one show when I was a kid on like late night at HBO Skinemax or whatever. And they had this, it was called the Sunday Night Sex Show, I think. Her name was Sue Johansson. And she always talked about how, you know, novelty will spice up the bedroom. And what better thing to turn to for novelty than internet porn? And she often recommended internet porn to couples that would call in. You know, this was like midnight. My parents thought I was asleep, and I'd sneak on the TV and be watching this when I was like 10 years old. And so, you know, from a young age, I thought porn would spice up the bedroom. So I thought it was awesome. I thought it was pleasurable, which it was. You know, growing up as a teenager, it was pleasurable. It was awesome in my teenage mind. I was completely unaware of the potential negative effects that it could cause. And so going into college, I was experiencing negative effects, but I had no clue at the time what to attribute them to, or that they were even that severe. I just thought that was a part of me. Like, for instance, my refractory period, the time it takes a guy to get another erection after he ejaculates, started increasing. So like, for instance, I was a healthy 18-year-old guy, but I would need like an hour before I could have sex again. And that was abnormal, but you know, I just thought, okay, that's just how I am. It wasn't until many years later that I can attribute that to my porn use, and it all makes perfect sense in hindsight. But it wasn't until I was 23 that I really hit rock bottom. I went to have sex with a gorgeous girl I was extremely attracted to, in love with. Everything was great. And when we went to have sex, my body could not respond at all. So here I was, you know, otherwise healthy, really attracted to this beautiful girl I was in love with, and couldn't feel anything with a naked female right in front of me. And it completely was just like a kick in the gut, man. I remember, you know, that night I literally didn't go to sleep. I just laid there with a tear in my eye because I was so confused, so broken, had no idea what was wrong with me. And that really, and that was in May of, or that was in March of 2011. St. Patrick's Day, to be exact. And I went on a journey to find out what the hell was wrong with me. And I Googled and Googled and Googled and read articles and listened to experts and listened to podcasts. And I honestly spent 2 months just researching everything I could about sexual function and what could possibly be wrong. And for the most part, all I saw was performance anxiety. Like, that was all the answers I was getting was, oh, if you're a young, healthy guy, you're just nervous, man. You just need to relax, bro. And I was like, that is not the problem. Like, I was not that nervous. I've been sexually active for 9 years. I know how my body feels, and I know what I should be feeling right now. And I know I was attracted to her. And so I knew that wasn't the problem. And I just didn't know what was wrong. And then I found a post on a forum that blew my mind. And it was a simple test. It said, see if you can masturbate without porn. And I remember reading that sentence, see if you can masturbate without porn. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I haven't tried to masturbate without porn in a decade. because I had porn on my laptop. I had porn on my Sony PlayStation Portable, which for the boomers that are listening, that's like a Game Boy. And I had it on everything. And so I used that constantly. I always had access to porn, and I never tried to masturbate to my imagination or just to sensation alone. And so I tried it, and I realized I couldn't. No matter what I fantasized about, no matter what I did to myself to try and achieve an erection, I couldn't function at all. And that's important to point out a couple different things right here, because if you cannot masturbate without porn, then that rules out performance anxiety, because it was just me and my hand on a nice relaxing Sunday afternoon. I'm not nervous about what my palm thinks of my penis. And so
you're just eliminating potential
absolutely
causes.
Yeah, okay. Potential causes. You can go down the list, right? So if you can't masturbate without porn, but you can get an erection easily with porn, that's important, because if your penis functions with porn, it's not an organic problem, meaning, you know, it's not a blood flow problem where your veins are blocked and it's a cardiovascular problem. So my penis did function, but only with a specific stimulus that I had taught my brain to respond to. Like Pavlov's dog that salivates when you ring a bell, my arousal template in the brain only responded when I would type in my favorite porn website or when I'd open my laptop. I would immediately start to get aroused. But when presented with a real naked female right in front of me that I found drop dead gorgeous, it was like an alien experience. There was no arousal. I literally trained my brain for that wrong sport. I wired my brain and conditioned it deeply all through my adolescence to need that specific stimulus, that constant clicking from tab to tab, that compilation video where there's a new shocking image every 2 seconds, pounding my reward circuit with dopamine blast after dopamine blast, keeping arousal high. A real potential partner, no matter how drop-dead sexy she was, couldn't compare to that unending novelty and shock and surprise that internet porn gave me. And so it couldn't have been more clear at that moment. This was May 17th, 2011. I broke down in the shower, sobbing in the fetal position, and my whole life flashed before my eyes. Like, I realized, I looked back on that, you know, increased refractory period when I was 18, that low libido that I had in college for real partners, yet I was always horny and craving porn and pixels on a screen. Like, everything started to make sense. Why I escalated into shocking genres of porn that made me go, what the hell did I just watch, when I was done after wiping myself off with napkins in a dark corner in the room. Like, everything started to make sense, and it couldn't be any more clear that I trained my brain to need porn to function.
Wow. Thanks for sharing all that. It's great info. It's a great experience to learn from. Can you talk to you? You gave the example of the Pavlov's dog and the bell. Can you talk to that a little bit more?
Yeah. So the brain learns and by, you know, strengthening synapses. There's a term called long-term potentiation and long-term depression. And basically what that means is nerve cells that fire together wire together, and nerve cells that fire apart wires then depart. So the behaviors that you engage in actually form neurological pathways in your brain's reward circuit. And with Pavlov's dog, the researcher, for those that aren't familiar with the experiment, it's a really awesome experiment. This researcher would ring a bell and then give his dog food. And all animal owners or pet owners know that there's something you do or something you say that your dog will start freaking out. You know, it'll start huffing and puffing and wagging its tail and, you know, running in circles. You know, for me, one of the things that drives my dog crazy is just the jingling of my car keys. Because especially lately with quarantine, it's like we're going on walks at the park. And so I'll drive my car to the park. And every time I grab my keys, now, the last 3 months, my dog has been conditioned to know that car keys mean, okay, we're probably going to the park. And so as soon as I grab those keys, my dog starts freaking out. And that's what Pavlov did with his dog. He would ring a bell when he gave it food. And so every time he'd ring the bell, his dog actually started to salivate when he simply heard the bell. So he conditioned that cue. Scientists would call that a cue, something that reminds you of the reward. So he conditioned the bell to the reward of food. And with porn addiction, you condition your arousal template to everything associated with your porn use, whether that's a specific genre, whether that's a specific website or a porn star's name, or maybe just your device, seeing your device in the corner of your room, whatever. Any cue like that now makes you crave porn and not a real person, because you're not training yourself to have sex with your partner. You're training yourself to seek that dopamine hit from your device, whether it's your smartphone or your laptop. And so if you want to use the Pavlov's dog analogy, guys and female addicts too are getting trained to salivate, or we could say get excited to pixels on a screen and not a real person. What Pavlov did that was really interesting, and this is, I think, the most important part of the study, is he unconditioned his dog to the bell. So a lot of people mention the first part, but they leave off the second part of the study. What he did was he kept ringing the bell, and he would stop giving his dog food. And what that showed is, over time, his dog stopped salivating when he heard the bell. So that second part of nerve cells that fire together, wire together, is nerve cells that fire apart, wires depart. So what he did was he departed the neural connection by ringing the bell and not enforcing the reward with positive reinforcement. So eventually his dog learned that when he hears a bell, nothing good's gonna happen. And in terms of porn addiction recovery, that gives a lot of hope, because you can avoid reinforcing that reward pathway in your brain, the neurological pathway for porn. You can actually avoid reinforcing that and rewire it back to a real partner. And so that's what guys are doing when they reboot. There's two processes. There's the rebooting, where you regain sensitivity. And scientists have shown that when you avoid intense stimulation, your brain can grow more dopamine receptors. And dopamine can lead to, you know, motivation. And in terms of porn addiction recovery, can cause more stimulation during sex. You can feel more pleasure, essentially. So once you regain the sensitivity, then you can rewire and form new healthy neurological pathways back to a real partner. So really there's two steps. And if you have severe porn-induced erectile dysfunction, for instance, there's two steps. You can regain sensitivity and then rewire back to whatever it is you want to rewire to. And in my case, it was, you know, making love with my partner.
That's really cool. It's interesting to think about the fact that Pavlov's dog is a member of Reboot Nation, basically.
Founding father.
Founding father of Reboot Nation. There we go.
Founding canine.
That's true. Cool. Well, that was great stuff, man.
Yeah, I feel like the neuroscience is beneficial when you know what to do. You know, a lot of guys ask me in recovery, like, okay, what do I need to avoid? Can I swipe Instagram and look at booty pictures? Can I do this? Can I get on Snapchat? Can I do this? But when you really understand the neuroscience, and you understand that anything arousing on pixels on a screen, anything that mimics your porn addiction behavior, can potentially be a problem. And I think when you start with that foundation from a simple basic neuroscience understanding, it can give you some answers in all areas of porn addiction recovery, and lead you in the right direction to where you know what you need to do to recover.
Can you speak to what is a supernormal stimulus?
Yeah, so the concept of supernormal stimuli comes from a dude named Nicholas Tinbergen. He found out that you can trick animals, birds specifically, to take care of large, fake, colorful eggs. And they'll abandon their real eggs, their real offspring. And, they've found that beetles will mate with beer bottles, brown beer bottles, because the beetle thinks that that beer bottle is a big female that will lead to stronger, more success in reproduction. And so you can do this across the board with like a ton of animals. There's been lots of interesting studies where mammals can be tricked into preferring fake to real, because it's more stimulating to the reward circuit. And, evolutionarily speaking, that's because they think that it's better for survival and better for reproduction. And so when you look at that concept in porn, you see that novelty, unlimited novelty, and clicking from tab to tab taps into the brain's reward circuit. That, you know, subconsciously your brain thinks that you're fertilizing thousands and thousands and thousands of mates, when really you're just looking at pixels on a screen, you know, red, yellow, green dots. And our subconscious doesn't know that. It's not smart enough to realize that. Now, consciously, I can tell you, yeah, sure, I'm looking at a screen. I know it's fake. But once you're aroused, that, you know, the prefrontal cortex shuts off, you're not thinking clearly, your reward circuit's buzzing, and you end up fertilizing your laptop or your smartphone, essentially. And so you get tricked into preferring that supernormal stimuli, like the bird that neglects its eggs and sits on the fake ones, like the beetle that humps the beer bottle. Some young people are making love to their laptop and ignoring their partner that might be crying themselves to sleep in bed next to them. And this doesn't necessarily happen consciously. This can happen over years of brain training, right? You know, I don't know any young guy that would say, oh yeah, I'd rather jack off to porn than have sex with a beautiful person. It's like, you might not consciously say that, but that's what's playing itself out in reality, you know, in millions of young people. They're tricking, the reward circuit is being tricked into thinking that what might be more stimulating temporarily is better than the real deal, and it ends up numbing themselves to the point where they can't even have the real deal. And so that's the concept of supernormal stimulation. It's more stimulating than something you can have in real life, something you can experience in real life. So it might be more pleasurable temporarily, but long term it can have the complete opposite effect of leading you to that place, like I said, where I couldn't even experience sexual pleasure without it.
Makes sense. I was looking at your Instagram earlier, and one of the things that stood out to me in your bio is the hashtag people over pixels. I like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're explaining, is like, let's choose people over pixels.
Yeah, it's not just, like, sometimes I talk about social media and video games too. My main focus is on porn, obviously, but just the whole concept of the more connected you get online, the more disconnected you can get in real life. And I think anybody that's heavily, heavily into technology understands this or have experienced it at some level or another. You know, whether it's spending all day on Twitter, you know, like right now I'm trying to kick my Twitter addiction. I'm freaking hooked on that thing. Like, you know, especially with my insatiable curiosity of mainstream conversation and debate, I always want to know what people are saying. And so if I'm not careful, I'll be swiping Twitter, you know, at dinner, and my wife's like, get off your phone. And then I feel like, oh my gosh, like, here I am, I talk about staying off of pixels and I'm still struggling with it. And it's just that whole concept. Like, I think as a culture, we know that technology's great. It's a tool. You can use it for good. Like what we're doing right now, we're talking over the internet on mics. And it's brilliant if you can use something for good. But we need that education of potential negative effects, and the fact that it can be so stimulating, it can be so awesome. You know, when you're talking to teens, you gotta acknowledge the fact that yes, it can be really pleasurable, but here's the deal: it can take from you that pleasurable experience in the real world, and that's what we are all after. You know, I don't think there's anyone on their deathbed that will say, you know what, man, I wish I would have watched more porn in my life. It's like, no one will ever say that. What they will say on their deathbed is, I wish I would have loved my partner more. I wish I would have connected with my friends and family more. And so we might be chasing likes and swipes and followers on social media, but if we don't realize that at the end of our life, that's going to lead to just complete emptiness when you didn't make any real life connections, then there's going to be a lot of people hurting. And I know it because I was there. I was that person that was, you know, suicidal and depressed during my recovery, where I was just so broken that I got so connected to this technology that I was neglecting the people that loved me most. One of my favorite quotes that I like to say is, there's no amount of porn that can ever love you back. So for the people that are chasing connection, that are, you know, turning to porn for a lack of intimacy, I can guarantee you that you'll never feel intimate, and you'll never will feel connected if you're turning to pixels on a screen. It'll never give you what you are chasing after. It'll only rob you of that thing. It'll only rob you of the experience that you're actually chasing after, to the point where you'll feel more broken and alone if you're turning to porn to make up for some pain, to ease some pain, to maybe turn away from some trauma and abuse. porn will only enhance that. You'll feel more abused. You'll feel more, I guess, lonely. And if you're turning to it for pleasure, you'll feel desensitized and you'll feel numbed. So it won't give you what you're pursuing. It'll actually enhance and increase the negatives. At least in my experience, it did, and millions of other young people.
Thanks for sharing that. One thing that stood out, Gabe, is when you mentioned the fact that you were suicidal during some of a portion of your recovery. Mm-hmm. That's some heavy stuff. And I don't know if how much you want to talk to that, but I was wondering if you would talk to that a little bit more, because if someone goes to your Instagram and or listens to this conversation, they get this great vibe from you, so much energy, so much positivity, so much knowledge. And then if they go to your Instagram, it's like, man, this guy has it together. So it's challenging to imagine you having suicide ideation. If you feel comfortable talking to that a little bit more, I think some of our listeners and myself included would appreciate that.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, Instagram's a highlight tape, right? I mean, I guess I should probably do more of that now that you point that out. I can definitely and am willing to share some more of my darker moments on social media. And maybe that's something everyone could do. Maybe that's the problem with social media, is that it's a highlight tape and it increases anxieties and loneliness and discontentment and everyone that's scrolling the highlight reel of everybody else's life while not sharing the nitty-gritty ugly days that everyone has. Because I certainly have them. And back in my recovery was definitely my recovery was the worst season of my life. I mean, straight up, absolutely terrible. Like I said, from that first night where I felt broken and couldn't sleep, it didn't stop for several months. I went into withdrawal, which for behavioral addictions, a lot of people think you only have withdrawal with substances, but all addictions share similar brain changes. And when any addict gives up their addiction, you can see neurochemical changes like increase in CRF and norepinephrine. These are stress chemicals, and you know, increase anxiety and stress. And you can also see a decrease in dopamine, which can lead to low motivation and feeling in the pits. And so I definitely experienced that, where I was irritable, I was anxious. I am typically, I try to be a laid-back, chill dude, but during my recovery, I definitely was just not myself. I had trouble sleeping, battled with, you know, borderline insomnia some nights where I just could not sleep. I had a panic attack at work one day where I literally just ran out in the alley. It's a funny story, actually. I worked in a factory temporarily for a couple months, and I was counting nuts and bolts. And I literally thought, man, my nuts and bolts don't work right now. And I just had that funny thought. And then like after giggling for a second, I like broke down and started crying. And I ran out into the alley, and I remember I found this cardboard box by the dumpster, and I just like destroyed it, just kicked it. And then I ended up just crying out in the alley, you know, 23-year-old man, thought I was tough stuff. And here I am bawling my eyes out because my dick's broken. And it was a humbling couple months, that's for sure. And one of the biggest things that really just broke my heart was I was in love with someone that I wanted to have sex with, and I could not do it. And not only that, I was lying to her. The first couple months, I wasn't telling her what the problem was. I was too embarrassed, too ashamed to say, like, hey, I know I'm trying for sex, which is really confusing, because every time I try, I then say, oh, no, we should wait, because I realized my penis wasn't getting. And so I was just confusing the hell out of her. And that was, you know, exacerbating the stress, to where here I am lying to someone I love. I don't know if I'm going to recover. At the time, back in 2011, we thought most people were going to recover within a first couple months, like 2 months, 6 to 8 weeks was kind of what we were seeing on average. But again, that was those older guys that didn't grow up on internet porn. So in the early 2010s, you saw a change in the reboot community. You started seeing younger guys take longer than older guys, which was just mind blowing, because you're like, no way. You know, no way a teenager is going to take longer to recover than a 55-year-old man. That's right. Completely backwards of what you'd expect. But science came out about the adolescent brain. Neuroscience on sexual conditioning came out that actually made a lot of sense, that young people in their most malleable years of their brain, where it's really changeable, really moldable, and you have a, you know, billions of new neurons grow when you're 11, 12, 13 years old, this drastic neuronal growth right around the time our generation was chronically consuming internet porn. So those most moldable years where your brain's vulnerable to addiction and sexual conditioning, that's when kids start clicking the tabs. That's when kids start watching the hardcore porn, the violent porn, the abusive, misogynistic porn, and they're wiring that into their arousal template in the most vulnerable age of development. And that creates, in simple terms, a Grand Canyon neurological path in the brain that an older guy who grew up, you know, using a Playboy magazine where the novelty and shock and surprise wears off when you're done turning the pages and you have to wait another month before you get anything novel. The stimulation and the level of conditioning can't even compare to what internet porn can do to a young person. And so these young guys that grew up, like myself, wired deeply to internet porn. I was watching compilation videos in high school where the clip changed every 2 seconds. I was seeing a drastic angle in the highlights of best parts of porn clips. And I'd watch that for, you know, 10, 30 minutes to an hour. So I would see more naked people in 10 minutes in that session in 2005 than, you know, our ancestors would see an entire lifetime. And that creates this huge conditioning that's really hard to unwire, that led to younger people taking longer than older people. So fast forward to me in recovery, I didn't know that was a thing. So here I am past 8 weeks in recovery and I'm still not seeing any signs of improvement. And so that led to even more despair where, you know, I at one point I thought about 9 or 10 weeks in recovery, I wasn't sure. I thought I'd never recover. I thought, you know, I screwed myself up because I lacked education on potential negative effects. And so I'd sit there just sobbing, thinking that I'd be broken forever. And that's when, I guess, suicidal ideation crept in, because my identity had just been completely turned on its head. I was this socially confident, you know, sexually experienced guy that was in love with the girl of my dreams. And I was sexually broken, unconfident, and felt like I was completely worthless and would never function again. And I tried to hide it. I tried to maintain that smiling face whenever I hung out with people, always tried to be outgoing and friendly. But man, I remember my 24th birthday, towards the end of my recovery, I just cried when they were singing happy birthday. And it wasn't because I was happy. It was because I was extremely sad and pretending to be happy. And thankfully, as I got educated, and I want to turn this to hope, because this is what really changed my life, is once I found out the neuroscience of how the brain can always change. So here, you know, I had that thought that I'd always be broken, but once I read the book The Brain That Changes Itself, which I know you've read, I saw a social media post from you, Garrett, where you read that book. That book, chapter 4, completely gave me hope on the brain's ability. The concept of neuroplasticity is alive and well our entire life and never stops. We can always learn something new and we can always change our brain. That concept gave me hope. And as I continued to get educated, and as I read success stories by the freaking awesome brave men that posted their success stories on the recovery forums, don't know who they are, they use pseudonyms, but if you're listening to this, thank you so much. Y'all's stories saved my life. That research, their success stories, the hope gave me, you know, passion to not only help other people, but eventually led me out of the tunnel that I was in, that it provided me with that light at the end of the tunnel. And I eventually got out and realized, oh my God, like if I felt like that, if I was in the pits and I knew that there's so many other young people out there in the same position, like you said, that might be suicidal, or that might be depressed, or that might be a partner of someone that's going through this and they feel like it has to do with them and they're depressed and they don't know what the answers are or why their partner's not becoming aroused to them. Like there's so much hurt and collateral damage and no one was getting the information. I shouldn't say no one, because there was awesome organizations like Fight the New Drug doing it, but I just saw like they needed information and they needed other people to continue to come alongside great organizations like y'all's and keep raising awareness. And so I took all that hurt, I took all that information, and I tried to turn a negative into a positive, and I'm really thankful that I did, and I'm to this day thankful for amazing people like y'all that give me a platform to share hope and share information, because I know it can be life-changing, and also it can be in a hedonistic way, it can lead to more pleasure and it can lead to more love. At the end of the day, that's what y'all are all about, and that's what I'm all about, is love and connection and getting away from something that can rob you of it.
Well, we feel the same level of gratitude towards you and Reboot Nation, because you guys are doing lots of good, and so thank you, and thanks for sharing all that, man. You are an inspiration, and just listening to all your experiences, they're so real, they're so genuine, and it really is inspiring. One last question that I don't know if you answered, maybe I missed it. How long did your reboot take? You kept talking about 6 to 8 weeks, but yours took longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my reboot timeline, the first couple months, I didn't see much improvement. I started to get, as young guys would say, morning wood. I started to wake up with nocturnal erections at around 3 months, so that was some sign of improvement. And a good sign that things were moving in a positive direction. And then around 6 months, I could achieve an erection for oral sex. And I tried for sex during those months, but I kept failing. But it took me 9 months to regain full sexual function. And actually, it took over a year to be able to masturbate without porn, which is really important, because that, again, shows that I was so conditioned to respond to a certain stimulus a certain way. And it made it clear that, you know, anxiety wasn't the problem. It was sexual conditioning of my arousal template. So 9 months to regain sexual function. And I know that can sound terrifying to listeners, but let me make something really clear. I was one of the more longer cases we've seen. Most people recover within the first couple months. I should throw that out there. There are plenty of longer recovery accounts that we have, but you know, most older guys will recover within the first couple weeks if it's a porn-induced sexual dysfunction, sometimes maybe 2 months. And then younger guys can take, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 months and maybe longer. But the one thing I want to say is, regardless of how long recovery takes, if you do have a sexual dysfunction, that you can and you will recover. As far as we know, everybody that's avoided artificial stimulation and avoided intense stimulation so they can regain that sensitivity, and everyone that's tried to rewire with a partner has succeeded. So let that give you a lot of hope.
Cool. What can we do to support you and Reboot Nation? When I say we, I mean us at Fight the New Drug and our listeners.
I just would love for y'all to point people to my content. You know, like I said, all my YouTube videos, so the Reboot Nation on YouTube, I have several informational advice videos on there. I try to keep everything just really straight to the point and practical, while at the same time keeping some science behind it. So, you know, I'm not just spouting some bro science at you. But so, yeah, some of the recovery videos are very helpful as far as you know, I personally believe they are, because it's the same information that helped me. So pointing people to that, man, it's free content that can be really helpful. And then my Patreon page, if anyone, you know, has an extra buck or two that would want to buy me a coffee, I'd love to make more content and even work with y'all more in the future and help y'all on some of y'all's projects. Anything we can to further the mission and raise awareness.
We would like for you to make more content too, because it's always good stuff. So thanks for that. And I hope
I'll say one more thing. If anyone's interested in the like mainstream debate too, like I'm really active on Twitter. I follow y'all on Twitter, and I always try to stay up to date on the conversation and like tweet out arguments and like respond to articles. So if y'all read articles that, you know, might be dismissing the whole idea of porn having any negative effects, your boys probably tweeted something about it. So if cool. you want to follow me on there, that'd be great too.
Yeah, for sure. We'll make sure to link to your Twitter, Instagram, to your YouTube, and also to your Patreon and your website. Awesome. Anything I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. I just want everyone to know that if connection, sexual pleasure, and a good time is what you're seeking, pixels on a screen can end up leading you in the complete opposite direction.
That actually led me to one more, like, I have some curiosity now, one more question. I was about to finish, mm-hmm. but are you glad that you had to go through that looking back now? We talk about turning a negative into a positive. You're stronger mm-hmm. today because of the things yeah. you've had to go through. Well, I like to say that moments of bliss are not free. Like, mm-hmm. I just, the question is, do you feel like you're, are you grateful for the challenge you had?
Yeah. I guess I'd have to think about the words to use really deeply, but I definitely would say I'm grateful for the hell that I went through. There's a quote, lessons not learned in blood are easily forgotten. And I don't know. I mean, my kind of fear that I just hypothetically think about is would I even have been on that anywhere close to the same mission now if I never hit rock bottom? And I'm afraid to say I probably wouldn't have. And so I am thankful that I got that kick in the gut and that I went down that horrible path because I just think I needed it. I was young, arrogant, you know, selfish, and I was blind to how I was treating my partners, how I viewed my partners. I've always, you know, loved and respected the other sex, but I had a cognitive dissonance, if you will, of the objectification that I was doing and how I was using and, you know, manipulating partners in the past to do things that I saw in porn, whether that's consciously or subconsciously, I don't even know. Porn is such a normal thing now in culture that so many young people are, and studies are showing this, so many young people are now doing things that they're learning from porn in the real bedroom, whether that's choking, whether that's anal sex, whatever. Everyone knows what I'm talking about, but the impact porn's having definitely happened to me in my relationships in the past, and it screwed a lot of relationships up, and it screwed me up, and like I said, it has a collateral impact, and I'm so thankful that I hit rock bottom, and I'm thankful for having the ability to speak out on a platform like this and on just the internet in general. Here's something that just blows my mind. It's so crazy that I use the internet to learn and to read success stories when, you know, internet porn is what caused my problem. So again, it all goes back to that
using tool. The same tool.
Exactly. You know, I tweeted out a month ago, like, you can use social media as a tool or you can be a tool on social media. It's like,
that's a great tweet.
You
man.
Can, you can use this technology that we have, you know, social media, like, it's so awesome that you can connect with loved ones and you can FaceTime your family members from around the world. And man, we've seen that most clearly during the pandemic where everyone's locked down, but you can still have video face chat and Zoom calls with your friends and family and coworkers and whatever. It's like, it's such a beautiful thing, but it also has the potential to destroy. And you need to know the negative effects. Young people need to know the negative effects because they're growing up in this digital world, and they need to know how to steer themselves and to navigate it to healthy adulthood and healthy relationships. And so the work y'all are doing and the work I want to keep doing is doing just that, man, raising awareness so people can make informed decisions.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, we didn't even get a chance to talk about you going on to the Chelsea Handler show.
Oh, that was awesome. I man, yeah. What's better than a mainstream comedian talking about porn addiction and porn problems? And there's, you know, there's so many big names now that they've experienced themselves, right? This is so prevalent in society where so many mainstream people now are speaking up about it. I know y'all spoke with Lamar Odom, and, you know, you got Chris Rock making jokes on Netflix specials that, you know, he had to watch crazy content to be aroused. And my goal is that the potential negative effects of porn will be common knowledge so people can steer for real intimacy and connection. Love is amazing, and I hope everyone can experience it. And again, it won't be found through pixels on a screen. So,
well, it was great talking to you, Gabe, and let's stay in touch.
Yeah, for sure, Garrett. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listeners, you're invited to the club. Fighter Club, that is. If you're looking for a way to become a more active part of this movement, consider joining Fighter Club. For as little as $10 a month, you can create a real impact by supporting our efforts to educate and raise awareness on the harms of porn. Plus, by joining, you can get insider info 30% off all Fight the New Drugs conversation-starting gear, access to our secret store, and an exclusive Fighter Club kit sent to you when you sign up. Join Fighter Club today at ftnd.org/FC. That's ftnd.org/FC. See you in the club.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. If you'd like to learn more about today's guest and the conversation we had, you can check out the links attached to this episode. Again, big thanks to you for listening to this conversation. As you go about your day, we invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.